We're talking about the power of voice here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So let me ask you this. How do you sound? How do you really sound? And does your voice reflect the person you are? And the fact is, women's voices usually sound different than men's voices. And since we're conditioned to hear men talking all around us and in positions of power, that means the sound of women doing the same thing will sound strange, perhaps off-putting at first. That's the entry point to a new book we're talking about this hour that analyzes why women still haven't been fully granted the right to speak. Do you feel like you can never fully speak your mind in fear of how you might be perceived? Were you ever told to pipe down with a flurry of questions in the classroom or that you sang too loud? We're at 800-642-1234. Join in at any point. Veronica Rickert is an author and communication specialist. You may remember her from her Wisconsin Public Radio days. She was the host of The Veronica Rickert Show. She was co-host of Central Time and a senior producer at To the Best of Our Knowledge. And her new book is called Outspoken: Why Women's Voices Get Silenced and How to Set Them Free. Veronica, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's so exciting to be here on the other side of the mic.
So throughout your life, your voice has really been the central aspect of your pursuits. You were a vocal performance major in college. You've been radio host, and now you're a communications person and a voice coach. But when did you realize the power your voice had?
I think it's always been this gradual understanding. I always loved to sing. So from a young age, I was always singing. My mother couldn't get me to stop singing. It became a nuisance. And then I parlayed that into the vocal degree you mentioned. And then I kind of found my way to Wisconsin Public Radio, where I realized that all the stuff I've been doing, learning how to work with the breath and tweaking the voice to get it to perform in different ways, like an instrument. And by the way, I do really firmly believe the voice is an instrument. It just happens to be housed in our body. I realized how much power this had, both in communicating, connecting, bonding with another person, and also in being this vessel to convey who I am, my ideas, my beliefs, my passions to the rest of the world. And because I've been working with my voice for so long, because I loved it and I believed in it and I had spent so many years doing it, I had this sort of leg up in sort of using the voice as this instrument to connect with the rest of the world. And I looked around me and I saw that it wasn't that way for everyone, and especially women. And that made me sad. I wanted to change that.
In middle school, you were told that you were singing too loud and you were told to pipe down, just don't sing so loud. How did that make you feel?
Right. So I, you know, like a lot of girls, but it was very common that girls start out with a super strong belief in their voice. And then somewhere along the way, the path gets lost and we start to feel that our voice isn't as worthy anymore. There's some really interesting research. So that happened to me too. And the instance you're talking about, I was singing, I told you I love to sing. So I was singing in a choir performance or rehearsal. And I was singing full out, you know, just letting
Let it
rip.
Go.
And at the end of the number, the director said, you know, Veronica, she singled me up. Veronica, I can't hear anyone but you. You got to pipe down. And I remember being just horrified. Like I wanted the floor to open up and swallow me. And it took me a long time. She meant really well. She was a wonderful person. But it did have this effect of making me feel like this is bad when my voice is too loud and it's heard above other people's. And so it took me some really hard years of work to turn the wheel in the other direction again, and even to realize that because of this sort of instigating incident, probably plus all these other societal pressures that women feel to kind of keep it down and be, you know, respectful and don't make a ruffle, be considerate of people. It took me a long time to turn the wheel in the other direction and realize, no, I can be heard. I can be loud. I can be all those things again. And it took the working with my voice at the level of college performance, too, to really get all the way there.
We're talking with Veronica Rickert, and her new book is Outspoken: Why Women's Voices Get Silenced and How to Set Them Free. You can join in with your observations, your questions about how to set your own voice free. We're at 800-642-1234. And women in particular, how have you had your voice silenced, whether it be at home or work or somewhere else? How did that happen and what did you do about it? you can call in or email ideas at WPR.org. Now, Veronica, when you talk about voice and the specific way a voice sounds, what are some of the mechanicals there? What's going on in our body?
Oh, it's really interesting. So basically what's happening, if everything is going well and you're taking a nice, big, deep, nourishing breath, and that means for women releasing the lower abdomen, which is, by the way, the hardest part to get.
Because we're told to suck it in.
Right. I mean, probably from a super young age, 5, 6, all of, you know, we know we're not supposed to take up that much space. We're supposed to suck it in. And then later on, there's sort of this military grade underwear we get into so that we never let our belly fully release. So hopefully you've done that. And then the air is kind of piped up through the windpipe. It goes through the vocal folds where it's enhanced, goes through the larynx enhanced, and then there are all these great resonant spaces in the head, and sort of the cheekbones is a primary area, the soft palate, the throat. All of these things are unique to each person. It's what makes your instrument, and then it emerges as your voice. So it's kind of simple, and it's miraculous. People's vocal folds are different. Male vocal folds are different than women's. Vocal fry, when someone has what you may have heard, that term vocal fry, kind of like
we'll
this.
We'll be hearing about vocal fry later.
Then yes. Maybe the vocal folds are not quite vibrating symmetrically in the voice, in the physiology. So there are all kinds of different things that happen there. But it is sort of, I mean, I just explained it to you, maybe not as well as a trained voice therapist, but it is kind of magic, too, on the other hand, that this is what happens and that each voice is so unique. There is a magic to it.
You're a voice coach, and you come upon a variety of issues in terms of what women are up against in terms of how they're approaching their voice. In terms of, you use this word agency and finding an authentic voice. What is that journey like? And what do you mean by agency?
Agency is our ability to express ourselves and sort of act on our own behalves and be our own voice in many ways so that we don't need to rely on someone else to express our desires, our wishes, our needs, our thoughts, our opinions, that we can be that conduit. And so the voice is really the nexus of that. So in the book, I do talk about the voice as the physical instrument that it is, because I think we just need to know about what it is and how it works. But I also think about it as this vehicle for agency. You were using that word, so that we can take the voice and basically that we feel empowered to speak up when the time comes. We were talking about loss of confidence in girls. Well, there is some really interesting research about how around middle school, girls sort of go through these torturous mental acrobatics about the decision whether or not to share their voice. And they're weighing sort of, is there going to be a social cost? Am I going to regret this? And it really, the study authors refer to it as loss of voice, because that's sort of what happens. If we're not using our voice to express ourselves in the world and ask for what we need and advocate for what we believe and share our opinions, we don't have that sense of agency. We lose something that's really infinitely precious.
We're talking about the power of our voice and how it can be silenced. Veronica Rickert's new book is called Outspoken: Why Women's Voices Get Silenced and How to Set Them Free. Women, how have you had your voice silenced, whether it be at home or work, somewhere else? Are you compelled to change your voice when someone in your life criticizes you and tells you, no, your voice is wrong? Join in at 800-642-1234. Your observations, your questions about your voice, they're welcome. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about the power of the human voice and what happens when circumstances cause it to be mum, to hold back, to not talk. The book is called Outspoken, and author Veronica Rickert has lots of suggestions on how to find your voice. And she says, to invest in your voice, you invest in yourself. No one voice will please everyone, so make sure your voice pleases you. How do you sound, and how does your voice reflect who you are? Do you find yourself whispering at work in an open office space or in a cubicle? What happens when you command the floor and speak at a boardroom table? Do you hold back? 800-642-1234. Join in, and Veronica Rickert stays with us through the hour. Let's take a call now. Kendra joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Kendra.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Well, I had wanted to say that, you know, it's not only the tone of women's voice, but what they say in middle school that gets changed because we want to be accepted by the boys. I was a smart girl, and that was intimidating to a lot of the boys, as far as, you know, wanting to have some sort of social relationship. So, but I was never able to be anything but what I am. And, in fact, I can speak with a lot of different modulations in my voice to the point where I can be intimidating and not even realize it. I have, my husband will tell me, Kendra, you're speaking in an aggressive manner. And I'm like, really?
Wow.
I don't understand. Mm-hmm.
Well, Kendra, thank you so much for bringing that. Veronica?
Kendra, thank you so much for calling and sharing that. It made me think a little bit about an interview I did with Lynn Harris from Gold Comedy. She teaches girls stand-up, so not improv comedy. It's very important, stand-up comedy, because she believes it's really important for girls to learn to hold the room alone. So women, girls, we're already socialized to be team players, to get along well, to blend into that group dynamic. But what's important is to be able to do what Kendra did and sort of stand alone and use your voice and feel that you deserve all of the attention and respect that is given you. And the other thing is that, especially in those young years, middle school, high school, even younger, there's such pressure for girls to be perfect. And in stand-up, you can take your flaws and they're what makes you funny. And so to feel like you don't have to walk this tightrope that Kendra is talking about, that so many women and girls feel, to be perfect, and if you make one misstep, you fall off and it's game over, but that you can have these flaws and it actually makes you better. You control the narrative and you can grow up demanding the respect if you're kind of taking these tenets in. And that's what Lynn Harris from Gold Comedy believes. And I think there's really something to that. And if we can help girls at that young age try to hold on to that thread of their voice, I think it's a step that we need to start working on and taking.
Kendra, thanks. Let's go to Bethany now in West Bend. Hi, Bethany.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having me on. What a joy to be able to have this opportunity.
Oh, good.
I just wanted to share that women's voice oftentimes is taken down in our society by many different groups, but I think it's really important, and as you're talking about younger women, but women of any age, women need to support and raise women's voice and encourage them, as opposed to tearing them down and taking them down. It just seems like women's voice is such a challenge to be able to stand alone, as you say, in our society because of all the pressures around us. But I think women especially need to support other women and other women's voices and what they have to say and what they have to give.
Bethany, do you see that happening in your own life, in your own experience?
Oh, absolutely. All the time. In younger life, in young professional life, in midlife, in current life, it just seems like women have to work so much harder to have their voice heard and for people to listen. I think because of the makeup of our society, as well as, I think when I look around and I'm in groups and in environments, it just seems like it's so much more difficult for women to be supported and then support each other. It's so easy just to take that road of saying, oh, what did they say and how did they say it and oh, who are they? And it just is, it really saddens me. And so I just every day approach the day with, how can I lift other women up and lift other people up, because that's really how we'll all accomplish what we need to do in a day and in the world, is if we lift each other up and lift each other's voices up.
Well,
and
that
really
sounds really uplifting, Veronica.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I think she's getting at something that I've been hearing, especially since I started writing this book, that sometimes women aren't supporting other women, and they do need to do that uplifting that Bethany is talking about. And thank you so much for calling, Bethany. I think as I thought about this, it was really interesting, because of course you'd expect women to be the greatest advocates for other women, but that hasn't always been the case. And I think that in part, it's because when you get especially to the top, it's pretty rarefied for women. There might be one woman in a spot of three top at a company and an organization. And so there's almost this mentality of scarcity that can develop, because women look around, they say, oh, look, there's only really one spot for a woman here. And so it creates this false competition. I think as that changes, as we see more equity, you know, across companies, organizations, we're going to start seeing a better atmosphere for women's voices. And what's acceptable will change too, because right now it is very male dominated. So the male pattern of what does power sound like? What do we think power sounds like? Well, we think it sounds like a man. And if we can start changing that and realize, you know what, vocal diversity is okay. And in particular, women's voices, they do get singled out for just a multitude of sins in a way that men's voices don't get singled out. But as we start seeing more women in leadership in these top positions, that's going to start to change. And also just because we're doing things like this, we're talking about it and we're bringing attention to it.
Reminds me of the research on the Supreme Court, where women on the Supreme Court were interrupted more and started speaking more like their male colleagues on the Supreme Court.
Right. Yeah, that's really interesting to me. That one always just, it makes me think and it makes me sad and happy at the same time. So women on the Supreme Court, the researcher at Northwestern University, she wanted to know, if women hold power, does that mean that they will be immune from some of these ways that women's voices can be disrespected, interruptions, for instance? And in this case, no. You could be a woman on the Supreme Court and you would still be interrupted a third of the time more often than men were. So they were interrupted three times more often. And it didn't matter that they held this immense seat of power. But what happened was they started to speak more like men. So instead of taking a little more time to get into statements to say, well, excuse me, I think that, or these sort of polite bookendings of language sometimes maybe women do, maybe men do as well, but they stopped doing those things and they started just slicing in and speaking more like the men, is what
found. No preface to their remarks. They just go right to
in like a razor blade. Like, remember how we used to edit in radio with a razor blade, just slice. Exactly. And so, yeah, like I said, this made me happy and sad, because they found a way, they found a pathway for their voices and their opinions and an avenue for that agency and that unique legal mind that they had. But they also had to talk like men to do it. And I don't think that will always be the case.
Well, Anne from Minocqua couldn't stay with us, but says that women often undercut themselves by ending a sentence as a question rather than a statement, and asks, do you agree? And what do you make of that?
Well, she is talking about uptalk. So this idea that I'll take something that's a statement and turn it into a question. It's a nice day outside is a statement. With uptalk, you would say, it's a nice day outside. And this is sort of considered one of the many deadly sins of woman speak. But I think there's always a flip side to this. So, yes, it can be confusing. And it is something that women get criticized for quite a bit, and more than men, who also do this, by the way. But on the other hand, when I go up like this, it's a nice day outside, it might invite you to think, oh, well, now I'm being invited into the conversation. It's sort of a conversational opening, kind of like shaving a haircut, two bits. It invites this reply that gets at the inclusivity that women all often have when they talk. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But again, we have to ask ourselves, because women do it, is this why it's being singled out as something that's unfortunate? But maybe not. There may be instances where it's a good thing.
You also talk about how you approach conversation, that you love the back and forth, the give and take, and that interrupting someone isn't necessarily a bad thing.
I really love to interrupt. Just ask my poor family. I like to dive in because I get excited and then I start, you know, wanting to get in. And I don't intend to wrest control of the conversation when I do that necessarily, but I just want to hop in and hop out. And I'm at my best when I do that. But I have friends who kind of hate that. And I can tell because they give me a death glare. And then I'll just kind of try to stop and realize everyone has their own style. But I think in particular for women. So there's, you know, when you're talking among friends, it may be one thing. If you're talking in a professional setting, it may be another thing. And I do think that it can and should be a tool that women have in their kit. Because we've all, I mean, everyone, I think, men and women, have had that feeling where you're at a meeting, you have an idea, but you can't get in. It's going too fast, and you just can't slice in there and get your thought on the table. And this is interrupting is one way to do it.
We're talking with Veronica Rickard. Her book is called Outspoken, Why Women's Voices Get Silenced and How to Set Them Free. Your thoughts on this, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this conversation with some exploration of vocal fry that is after this news update here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about how to find your voice. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And our colleagues at the National Program, to the best of our knowledge, have been exploring the power of the voice this week on their show. And they put together this compilation of what vocal fry sounds like.
America's young women are running out of oxygen. What else could explain why so many of them sound like this?
Something called vocal fry that is creeping into the speech patterns of young women.
I sound like a sexy baby.
Shoes.
Fashion.
Pulling my leg.
A bazillion years ago.
Law school.
Fetch.
The only one.
Learn to fly.
Baby shopping.
It's called with vocal
Anna.
Fry, right? Oh, and humor. It's the most annoying thing ever.
Kind of like that.
We have a link to TT Book's episode on finding your voice over on the morning show page at WPR.org. And that last voice you heard there was Veronica Rickard. Her new book is called Outspoken. And you can join in 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you never are able to speak your mind in fear of how you might be perceived in your voice? Join in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Veronica, why does vocal fry get such a hit?
It really is interesting. It's such a hot button issue. Years before this sort of peaked and we started seeing all these pieces about it, these journalistic pieces, it's still, whenever I bring this up at talks, people just go nuts and I should just do the whole talk about vocal fry. And I think it's because it's one of these things that has changed among a large group of people the way that they sound. In this case, it's young women, and it is this creaky sound in the voice, which for some people, it's really just anathema. Susan Stamberg from NPR said to her ear, it's unlovely, and she doesn't like it. So she's, you know, of an older generation. And what I found and what research has found was that it does sort of break down along generational lines, that older generations tend not to like it. They think it sounds unprofessional, maybe like the person doesn't care, like they're not invested, in this case, again, young women. But among younger women, it's perceived as having a lot of confidence and authority. So it really kind of lowers the voice. And that's why initially researchers think that women started doing it, although, interesting sidelight, we think that maybe it wasn't something that began among young women at all, but among affluent older men in England, and it migrated here. So it does have this very powerful reactions that it elicits in people. They hear it and either they kind of love it or hate it, but everyone uses it. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, I use it. I'll come home at the end of the day. I'm so tired. And I think we all do. And especially when we run out of steam in our voice. We're talking, we get to the end of the sentence, we run out of air, and sometimes it goes into a little bit of fry territory. So essentially, I think we need to lighten up, and I do think we need to give young women a break and realize that we got to listen to what they're saying and not so much how they sound.
Let's bring in another call now. Debbie joining us from Ladysmith. Hi, Debbie.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say that I totally believe in supporting women to use voice and to.
Oh, I think we lost you, Debbie. Are you still there? Oh, I think we're losing Debbie. And her grandmother was soft-spoken, didn't speak often, but character was everything for the people who listened. And Debbie says she really supports young people using their true voice. What is it like to have that mentor in your life? For you, it was your mom who was very outspoken.
Right. I think it's so important for women to have role models. So important. But I mean, what Debbie's story kind of gets at, too, though, is her grandmother didn't speak. I'm sure she loved her very much and she didn't speak as much. And I think it is our choice, as long as we keep in sight that it's our choice how we want to speak and not let it be imposed upon us by anyone. But back to your question about mentors. So the Moth Storytelling Show, when I was a host on Central Time, we interviewed the founder of the Moth, John Dawes Green, and he told this great story about how initially in the early days of the storytelling show, the Moth, women didn't tell stories and they didn't win. And they started talking amongst themselves at the Moth and they kind of went, maybe women just aren't good storytellers, which, you know, is a horrible conclusion. And I'm surprised anyone was batting it around, but they were. But he said it took these other women getting up there, telling these tour de force stories and women in the audience seeing that. And it took sort of this building of a good role model from the audience, from the ground up over time. And now he says the majority of women, the majority of winners on the Moth are women. So it just goes to show you, I think women do really need that role model. And it's so important to have that for young women and for women at any phase in their life.
Really paving the way for those storytellers to see other women doing it first. And then they feel that they can do it too.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was like that with me and my mother, just like you were saying.
Let's go to Sarah now in Zion, Illinois. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Hey, thank you. And Veronica, it is really nice to hear your voice. I was just thinking about you yesterday. I really was.
Thank you.
So I was listening to Central Time for the first time in a long time. I wanted to ask you, you know, this has definitely been something that I, you know, have experienced in my life also, but a while back, I remember reading on the WPR website that you come from a Latina background. Or that you're Latina. And I'm a bilingual teacher and I work with a lot of Latino people and I have a lot of colleagues and all my kids are Latino. And I just wanted to ask you, because it seems to me, I could be wrong about this, but my view of the women I know is that there's kind of this expectation that they were raised with, which is to be pleasant, I mean, even more than us, to be pleasant, to please people, to serve everybody, and not to express their true feelings and to be quiet and definitely don't contradict men. And I just wonder if that's something that you ever experienced and if that has anything to do, and if it is, if that's, well, just what it was like.
Sure. Thank you for that question, Sarah. And, you know, if we were sitting down for maybe like 4 hours, I could tell you the whole story of my background. But I didn't grow up in the Hispanic culture necessarily. My father was from Mexico, but I grew up in Wisconsin with my mom, who was, you know, of German heritage, and my grandparents. So I didn't personally experience that, but I have, and I think that interview didn't end up in my book, but I did work with a woman who runs a clinic in Milwaukee that's bilingual, one of the only physical therapy clinics in Milwaukee. And she said exactly what you're saying, that she feels like in Hispanic culture, there is a trend to have quiet girls and women who defer more. Now, that's her take on it. I certainly don't know if she speaks for everyone. I'm sure she doesn't. But I mean, I think that I think in most cultures, this is just a trend. If you look at all the way back to Aristotle, he said, silence is the glory of woman, but it is not equally the glory of man. So looking way back then, King Lear, in Shakespeare's King Lear, he talked about his dead daughter Cordelia and said her voice was ever gentle, soft, and low, an excellent thing in woman. So we've had this sort of thread running through these hundreds of years about why it's desirable for women to be quiet, to defer, to keep a low profile. You know, Aristotle said silence. At least, you know, with Cordelia, she had a soft, low voice in King Lear. But, I mean, I think, and there's many examples like this, that get at this idea that, yeah, women have been told to tamp it down. And I think we're kidding ourselves if we think those days are behind us. They're not behind us yet.
Well, you talk about the talking gap in your book between women and men. What do the statistics say about how much men talk versus how much women talk?
That's really interesting, because I think there has been sort of this tongue-in-cheek, oh, you know, you can't shut women up. Women talk so much. But what I found as I was looking at this was that when it comes to bigger social groups, women may speak more than men. But when it's in decision-making groups, men talk more than women, and quite a lot more. So it's interesting there that we have these perceptions, and it may be that they're situational, that men talk more in these. So we're talking decision-making groups, and we're talking, you know, maybe work situations. We're talking Congress. And by the way, this is true of Congress, at least in one of the studies I looked at, where when male senators who had a high power score took the floor, they talked more than senators with lower power scores. But for women who also held high power scores, they didn't talk any more than women with lower power scores. So it seemed like when men had more power, they felt entitled to talk more. Women did not. And so there is this dichotomy.
When I was reading your book, you feel very aware of how your body is, because you talk about how much space you take up, whether it's space at a boardroom table. Do you put your arms out? Do you cross your legs? And so I'm reading and I'm thinking, I've got my feet up right now. I'm taking up a lot of real estate, but they're still crossed, right? My legs are still crossed. What about how we position our bodies influences our voice?
Right. I do this exercise in my workshop where people, first of all, get into a position that I call the man spreading posture, because everyone knows this word by now. This idea that on subways, men will just sort of sprawl out. Not all men, of course. Let me just preface, not all men do this thing. But there was a lot of attention paid to this on subways for a while, that
yes,
some men would sprawl out and take two seats or three seats instead of one seat, this sort of big physical imprint, and that women wouldn't. And I sort of looked to see, well, what happens? What are women doing? And I tried to find women in really sort of big physical postures, pictures online to share with my workshop participants. And it was really hard to find any. All these women were in what I've come to call the lady pretzel, which is legs crossed, arms crossed, looking just kind of like they were trying to shrink themselves down into the smallest possible version of themselves. And so, you know, maybe there's nothing wrong with it if it's comfortable for your body. And I'm certainly not saying never do this, but when we're in that position, and let's say then we're also at a boardroom table and we're trying to speak, we're trying to take one of those deep, nourishing breaths, it's really hard. It's really hard to support your voice when you're all tied into knots like that. And then, as I was talking about, when you add Spanx or something like that, then you're really in trouble.
Author Veronica Rickert is with us through the hour. The book is Outspoken. On a societal level, what needs to change as we explore the voice and who can speak, and how and where do you see that changing? And do you have a story of finding your voice? If so, what happened? Be part of the conversation at 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. You're with us on The Morning Show as we explore the power of voice. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What it's capable of, how it gets silenced. Author Veronica Rickert writes that the bedrock of the struggle for women and other historically silenced voices to have a voice is to be given the right to thrive at your job, in your relations, as a citizen, and as a human being. The book is called Outspoken. Still time for your questions, your insights, 800-642-1234. Is there someone in your life whose voice is precious to you? Do you look up to an outspoken person who has nurtured you in a way to speak up, regardless of circumstances, to find your authentic voice? Call in, tell us about it, email ideas at WPR.org. And Veronica Rickert stays with us through the hour. Let's go to Joy now, joining us from West Bend. Hi, Joy.
Hi, thank you so much for this topic. I don't think we can cover it enough. I just wanted to credit Wisconsin Public Radio with allowing me to call in call shows like this. It has helped me to practice being able to speak. It doesn't hurt also to be an older woman and finally have the nerve. I grew up with four brothers. When I was a young woman, I thought that only men were interesting to talk to. I guess I hadn't had much experience with women that had great ideas. And then I became a nurse and was in the company of smart women and learned how to, you know, I'll say trust women. I have a bumper sticker that says trust women because women have good ideas. And I just wanted to mention that I've been in, like, social justice group, a peace group, even at my liberal church. When I've brought up ideas, they've been poo-pooed or, you know, when the men bring up ideas, they want the women to work on them. I just think this is an important point in our male-dominated society.
Joy, thank you so much for that. What happens there?
Joy, thank you so much for calling with that. And it's great that she's felt that she's learned to speak from speaking on Wisconsin Public Radio. Yeah, that is something, isn't it? There, that brought to mind for me also a study that I came across about how with girls, initially they were told stories about a super smart person and a super nice person. And boys were asked the same. And initially, both boys and girls picked their own gender when asked which character is the super smart person. They boys picked boys, girls picked the girl character. But just a couple years past that, girls picked boys as the most likely to be the super smart character, or the man. And the boys also picked the man as the super smart character. So girls were questioning their own gender's capacity for brilliance at something like 7-8 years of age. And so I think that carries with us. There are reverberations of that. And I think every woman that I've spoken to about this book has had a story about how her idea may have been marginalized in a meeting. And or maybe a couple minutes later, a man a few seats away rephrased the idea and everyone thought it was fabulous. And so we are really just waking up to this, the fact that I think, as we were getting at earlier, women aren't typically the voices that we hear in power. And so when we do hear a woman, we sort of have to check ourselves and say, okay, I really need to listen to the content here. And women do this too, because we're so conditioned, it's so baked in to think that a woman might not be the interesting one, might not be the powerful one, might not be the smart one, that I think it's time that we all really, as a society, start bringing that awareness to it. And I think HR departments need to be talking about this too. And, you know, with Vocal Fry, are we really hearing these women candidates if they're coming in? Or are women on staff, are we really hearing them, or are we judging them by their voices? It's time to acknowledge sort of this voice bias that we have.
When Joy was saying about the things, ideas she brings up, and they're poo-pooed, they're sidelined, what are some tips you have for managing when that happens?
For managing? Well, I think for meetings, there's a lot that people can do, managers, to surface all the voices. They can say that they want to hear from everyone. They can create alternate channels that are used for someone who might not be at that point where they're comfortable jumping in there with their voice or their idea. They can be really cognizant about who surfaced that idea in the first place. And women can support one another, and allies, men can support women and each other too, with the fact that if someone says something and it gets marginalized and then someone else brings it up, that ally can say, hey, Kate brought that idea up. I think we need to remember, you know, that was, you know, her original idea. If I don't have an ally in the room, I can say, thank you for picking up on that point, Steve, that I made a little while ago. So there are little things we can do. It's hard when the burden is on the speaker themselves, but it's sort of this cultural shift that needs to happen. But there is good data about things that we can do in the workplace right now, changes that we can make that will start making sure that women's voices are heard.
And what if you're getting cut off?
If you're getting cut off, there's a bunch of things you can do. You can, there's in my book, there's a few pages about how to hold the floor, how not to be interrupted, and also about how to interrupt. You can say, hang on a second, let me finish my thought. You can hold up a finger in the direction of the speaker, not necessarily looking at them, because that sort of grants them implicit permission to continue speaking over you. You can talk at a slightly louder level, faster and longer than they do. And you can, with your physical imprint, like we were talking about, take up more space and kind of lean in as you speak. So it depends on what your comfort level is. Even Madeleine Albright, as I was researching this book, even Madeleine Albright said when she interrupts a room full of men, to this day, former Secretary of State, she feels a squirm of anxiety. So it's not unusual to feel like this is uncomfortable for all of us right now.
Let's go to Jeannie now in Menominee. Hi, Jeannie.
Hello. What an interesting program this morning. And so important at this time in our political atmosphere where we have all these very capable, intelligent women running for the presidential office. I'm just really impressed with your program this morning. Thank you so much. The reason I am calling, though, is because I grew up in an era when children were seen but not heard, and I kind of grew up not having my own voice because I really didn't have a lot of confidence to express it. I did not want to remain that way for my whole life, so when I attended the University of Wisconsin in Eau Claire, I took Speech 101 from a professor, a woman professor that changed my life. Mm. And what she did, she told her students that they could come speak to her after their speech and get their grade, or she would just post it. And, of course, I said, boy, I sure need to talk to her. So after every speech, I went in and talked to her. But the very first time I went in, after we had given a speech on doing something we'd never done before, and I drove an 18-wheeler from Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, to Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Wow.
Yeah, I'd never done that before, but my dad and my brother were both truckers, so my brother let me do that. And so I wrote about it. And then when I went in to talk to her about it, the first question she said asked me was, what grade would you have given yourself? And so I told her I would have given myself a B. And then she said, and why would you have given yourself a B? And I said, because my connecting ideas didn't flow easily. And we talked about that. And she said, well, actually, that I saw that too, and I gave you a B+. and I went in after every speech and talked to her. I never got less than an A in her class. I was her only student in that class to end up with a final grade of A.
Jeannie, thank you for bringing that story. And Veronica, what are some final thoughts you can leave us with about our voice?
Oh, to start loving it, to forgive it for not being perfect, to love it because it's you, to start taking up space and allowing your belly to fill with air, that beautiful, nourishing air that you need to speak. And also something I did when I started this journey thinking about this is when you're in that room and you find that there are no women speaking, or even just as a personal challenge to yourself, kind of like Jeannie was saying, challenge yourself to be the first one to speak or to speak at all, and look for those spaces where certain voices are not being represented, and you be the voice. You be the change. You be the mentor for yourself if there's no one else. And one by one, I think we're going to get there.
Veronica, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Veronica Rickert, author of Outspoken, Why Women's Voices Get Silenced and How to Set Them Free. Previously, she was the host of the Veronica Rickert Show here at Wisconsin Public Radio, co-host of Central Time, senior producer at To the Best of Our Knowledge, and she's now a communications specialist and a vocal coach. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.